Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the show. Boris Johnson continues to sink ever more into a pretty calamitous political situation. Just very quickly, we can see some of the polling today at the moment. The Tories now 10 points behind, not looking at all good. Here's another opinion poll. There we go. Another 10-point lead for Labour. Until recently, of course, the Tories were ahead. They'd been ahead for a very long time, but now have sunk very badly behind. Boris Johnson is somewhat less popular than cholera at the moment in terms of his approval ratings. What next, though? Is it the end of Boris Johnson? Are the Tories going to dispose of him? Is he going to drag them down all with him? Who could replace him? We've got so many questions. Now, we're very lucky to have our first guest. We're speaking to Matt Zarb-Cousin later about the broader politics, but we're very lucky to have Peter Oborne, who I'm going to bring in straight away because he's a very, very busy man. And I don't want to keep him waiting. How are you doing, Pete? It's great to see you.
Hello, Owen. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, indeed. Right. So I've just showed. In fact, let's look at the leader approval ratings. Johnson's net approval falls to minus 42. Now, Tory MPs, when they made him leader, thought he was a charlatan, a liar, deceitful. But they thought he had a unique cut through to the electorate, particularly in key areas that the Tories wanted to win. Do you think that calculation is starting to change?
Well, I'm not sure that they did think he was a liar, etc. I used to put it to them. they insisted he was a man of upstanding integrity. And obviously, there's an enormous change in the perception, in his popularity in the country. He was seen as an election winner. Perhaps he can be again, I think, is the calculation which his allies, and remember, he does have very significant allies still. And the Conservative Party, as a general, as a whole, seems to be supporting him. And the cabinet is supporting him. So that perception is not apparently changing, judging by the public comments of the people who run Mr. Johnson, including cabinet ministers and MPs.
Do you think this is the end of Boris Johnson? Because he's supposed to be this guy who is the Teflon politician, survives the sort of scandals that would have destroyed any other politician. Or, you know, is this the end? Or do you think he could survive? Where are you at on how long Boris Johnson has left?
Yeah. It does remind me of that scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Do you recollect this knight? Tries to block the way of those, lop off one arm and he come out and get me and lops off another. And according to all known rules of politics, Mr. Johnson should have gone already. And yet there he is, still fighting on. We have his battle plan on the front page of the Sunday Times today, say Big Dog or whatever it's called, which seems to involve a number of, quotes, populist, end quotes, messages and blame the civil servants. We have one of those populist messages, really the most, and let's just pause at this, the Daily Mail front page, the Mail on Sunday front page today, it's now on first name terms with Nadine Dorries. Nadine's plan to slash the BBC, actually put it out of business, close down the BBC, is what that message is. And so there's a gift, it's an offer, really, from the Johnson high command to Rupert Murdoch and the big media owners to close down their biggest, the BBC, which they've been campaigning against, as you know, for some time, in return for support.
I'm wondering, because the Tory press at the moment are gunning for Boris Johnson in quite a big way, including the Telegraph. The Telegraph used to employ Boris Johnson. I mean, they paid him £250,000 a year, which Johnson famously called chicken feed. But people thought that was a way of them buying an influence. They thought he could be their guy to be prime minister. They backed his leadership campaign. But, you know, the Telegraph, they're splashing today on Carrie Johnson breaking lockdown rules. I'm just interested. I mean, maybe this is me being a bit tinfoil hat conspiratorial, but there does seem to be some decision amongst large parts of the right-wing press that he's outlived his purpose. He, you know, they backed him, obviously, originally, get rid of Corbyn, do Brexit, all the rest of it. Is that, do you think, an accurate reading? Because it's fascinating. These parties obviously happened a long time ago, and that was just constant, and the Tory press are going for him. Do you think, have they made an executive decision? What do you think?
That's a conspiracy theory that these media tycoons and editors get together and consult with each other how they're going to handle it. I don't think so. I think they must feel very embarrassed that they've supported him for so long through thick and thin. Remember, the Telegraph was the paper which, personally urged Johnson to come to the rescue of Owen Paterson and stop his suspension from the Commons by dismantling the standard sort of set up in the Commons. And that was actually the thing which set Johnson on the slippery slope. They can't ignore the papers, the views of their own readers. I haven't had a conversation with anyone at the Telegraph, so I can't sort of look, peer into their mind. But I did work for them. I would have thought they can't ignore the views of their readers. And if their political team get a story about a party, then they're going to run it. They're not sort of, you know, they're still journalists. But what strikes me as more amazing, actually, is that none of the right-wing papers have, and that's the Murdoch Group, the Associated and the Telegraph, have called on Johnson to go. So at the moment, they are supporting Johnson in that way. The view is he's got to sharpen up his act, he's got to say sorry, he's got to apologise, and then we can, to quote the Foreign Secretary yesterday, move on.
You worked for Boris Johnson at The Spectator, so you know this guy from quite a while ago. I mean, what do you think currently is going through Boris Johnson's head? I mean, I don't want to, you know, get you sunk too much into cod psychology involving the Prime Minister, but what do you think at the moment? Do you think his view is toughen this out, survival mode, take on everyone within the Tory party who dares to circle around him? Obviously, we've heard there's 35 Tory MPs who might have put letters of no confidence in him. What do you think his own view of it? Do you think he'd be rattled, or do you think he's thinking, I'm going to take this on?
Yeah, well, I worked closely with Boris Johnson at The Spectator when he was editor, and I was the political correspondent, and actually he was a joy to work with, very cheerful. But razor brain, and sort of let us all go down, get on with it. And if something is, and I don't, I think, and also he, I rather interpreted him probably as a liberal internationalist at the time. And what we now have is the sort of Tory kind of xenophobia, really, and culture wars, which is the exact opposite of what the way I interpreted Johnson 20 years ago. So I'm not sure it's that much help. I mean, you look inside, there he is. He's running the country. He's getting these polls. He's got these problems. He's reacting in a way which he would have personally mocked and despised in the days when he was editor of The Spectator. I would have thought, I used to have a conversation every Sunday night to discuss the week ahead with Johnson. And I imagine the conversation we would have been having is, shall we have the front cover of next week's paper calling on the Prime Minister to go as soon as possible before he does too much damage to the Conservative Party and the country, even more important.
You wrote this brilliant book, The Assault on Truth, Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, and the Emergence of New Moral Barbarism, which everybody should get a copy of and read. But, I mean, aren't you a little frustrated? Because what you did in this book is document at great length the history of deceit, of dishonesty, of twisting the truth, of half-truths, of just an incredible, you know, and you said yourself, the book could have been a lot, lot longer. I mean, aren't you frustrated that you wrote this book showing the guy for who he is? And all of a sudden now you've got various people going, well, Boris Johnson, awful behaviour. What a shocker. Because, I mean, he wasn't exactly hiding it, was he?
Yeah, that book, when I published it, it had a very nice review in The Guardian, but it was completely ignored by all of the Murdoch press, all of Associated Newspapers, the Express Group and the Telegraph Group. They didn't touch that book. And really, for a long time, the idea that Mr. Johnson was a liar was derided and mocked by his quite significant group of supporters in the right wing media and the Conservative Party and out in the country too. I think it's now. But what has changed is that these series of stories about parties where he said there weren't any, and we're now getting more and more evidence that there were, and the kind of grotesque double standards, and now it's become impossible, or for all bar a very few of Mr. Johnson's closest supporters, of whom there are a number, to support him. So that is why you're seeing the polls changing, not just in the country at large, but also among Tory activists. I mean, that's the Conservative Home, which is the voice of Tory activists, isn't it? Is now coming up with desperate polls for Mr. Johnson.
Just a couple of questions coming in from people watching. So Tad Campbell asked about Peter Bone's statement, his Tory voting constituents don't want Johnson to go. Does that sound correct? So, I suppose, interesting. I mean, some, you know, see Brexiteers think this is a big Remain conspiracy. That's what one columnist wrote in the Telegraph. So that's clearly tapping into something.
Who wrote that? As a matter of interest?
It was Timothy Stanley.
Stanley. Good Lord. Yes, right. Absolutely. So what's the question? I shouldn't have interrupted.
No, it's fine. He just said about Peter Bone apparently has come out and said his Tory voting constituents don't want Johnson to go. I'm not sure. I have to say the polling suggests a lot of Tory voters do.
Yeah, and Nadine Dorries, I think, who's a cabinet minister, believe it or not, she made a similar statement about her constituents. The polls suggest completely otherwise. And for what it's worth, before arriving, going on your programme, I did ring up one or two people who know what's going on. They're, you know, very well connected at grassroots level. And they were saying that MPs actually have a disconnect at Westminster from the very strong sentiment on the ground in their constituencies. Now, that disconnect is likely to change this weekend. They've gone back from Westminster, where they've been corralled by the Whip's office, and they're hearing the views on the ground. I imagine even Mr. Bone is hearing the views on the ground. It may well be that those views are so intense that when there'll be a massive change of mood when Parliament returns next week.
David Bowerter asks, if Boris has overthrown his leader, the Tories, what are the chances he'll try to drag down other Tories or even the whole party with him? Is he, what do you think, a vengeful kind of, I mean, I don't know. What would happen? Boris Johnson being taken out?
Because yeah, well, there will be a conspiracy theory that very like the Trump, you know, the liberal meet the Trumps, the conspiracy theory gathering around President Trump or the ex-President Trump, that the sort of liberal media, there was some sort of coup d'etat or something or other, some sort of establishment intervention which removed Trump. That's a very healthy conspiracy theory, which may actually manage to win Trump another term of office. And absolutely, this is going to happen. In fact, you're already seeing manifestations of it, that the so-called blob, the establishment, the liberal media, the BBC, there was a deranged piece in the Mail yesterday by some former member of, I think, the Revolutionary Communist Party called Hume. I may be wrong about his membership of the Revolutionary Communist Party. Anyway, this fellow, Mick Hume, was arguing that some sort of deranged attack on the Prime Minister from the BBC, as if they shouldn't report the facts. So you're going to get this, and it's going to be very, very much amplified, it would appear, in the, you know, our great newspapers, which are, you know, that Mr. Johnson will be the innocent victim of the BBC, the civil service. People like you, Owen, will get a bit of reprimand. You know, it's all some sort of mirage that Johnson has misbehaved. Why shouldn't he hold the party? You know, working hard. This is a sort of all got up And it's so much the opposite of the truth. For the last 22 years, you know, the BBC is doing its best to sort of best possible sort of version of Mr. Johnson's private and public conduct, you know, determinedly ignoring every sleaze scandal, every corruption allegation, and every lie, every falsehood. But that this will definitely going to get a lot of mileage. Will Johnson bring down the Tory party? I do think this is a profound moment in Conservative history. It can well be that this is the end of the Conservative party. Because what we're seeing now, I do think this is right, that the Johnson loyalists, you know, Nadine Dorries, the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, the Peter Bones of this world, they're arguing this is a sort of, this is the virtuous leave world of, you know, who've taken Britain out of the European Union, and now they're suffering the revenge of the Remainers. Now, there's going to be some people in the Conservative Party who will buy this, others will see it as a sort of, will see it for the nonsense it is. But I think the Conservative Party can split if Johnson goes. You will get a large number of people leaving in disgust, and then whoever takes over has to define himself, or just as likely herself, against the against Johnson. Was Johnson a great leader who was misunderstood, or was he a liar and a cheat and corrupt? I mean, it's, and so the leadership contest will become very, very tasty.
The end of the Conservative Party. It's a biggie, because the last time the Conservative Party split was the Corn Law. I mean, people thought they'd split over Brexit, which didn't happen. But you can actually see that. You can see the party being ripped asunder in the aftermath.
Well, I think it's the analogy I make is with the Trump's Republicans. And so you're now going to... Will Trump... Trump seems to have taken the Republican Party with him. And so if Johnson... leaves office, which I think he will, although I would say that the very well informed people I speak to think he won't. People think he's still got a fighting chance. I think he will be forced out. And the question is, will he take tranches of the Conservative Party with him? And if he doesn't, will the party split? That is where we are. And I think the party is in long-term disgrace. The reputational damage being done is now so great. Actually, even if he left tomorrow morning, very hard for the Conservative Party to recover at this point.
Just finally, because I'm going to let you go, just very finally, Kieran Buckley asks, if Johnson were to kick out Johnson and put in Rishi Sunak, would they shoot up in the polls? Rishi's taken a huge hit in his approval ratings. True, he used to be much more popular than he was. People didn't really know who he was. He was associated with Furlough. He is now in minuses, but he's actually less unpopular than Keir Starmer, let alone Boris Johnson, of course. He's now monstrously unpopular. What do you think about Rishi Sunak? And what do you think about the Tories' fortunes if he took over?
Rishi Sunak, he's quite good at numbers, I think. You know, he's a former banker, is he not? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any talent yet for politics. Secondly, he's very damaged, as every cabinet minister is, by association with Johnson. Matthew Parris, the Times columnist, wrote a very wise article a few days ago, pointing out that everybody who has anything to do with Johnson gets contaminated. And this applies above all to Sunak, who's had to support Johnson. Did Sunak know about these parties? And if not, why not? He's, after all, he's living next door. In fact, I think I'm right in saying that Sunak's flat is actually in number 10, whereas Johnson's flat is the larger flat in number 11. So how did Sunak not know about these parties? And if he didn't know, and then he's lied a lot. A lot of Johnson's lies about 40 ill hospitals and the national finances and so on, Sunak has mimicked. So Sunak is implicated, as they all are, in the Johnson debacle. Remember, when Johnson does go, I think it's when not. If he will leave, it'll be the first prime minister in British history that I can think of to actually leave office in this personal disgrace.
Yeah.
We've had prime ministers leave office, most famously Chamberlain, but also others, Peel over policy, you know, having been defeated on grave policy issues. But we have never had, that I can think of, a prime minister who actually leaves office as now awaits Johnson in disgrace.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same. Peter, that was absolutely brilliant. Everyone, do, now you've listened and or watched Peter's brilliant wisdom, do get his book if you haven't, The Assault on Truth, Boris Johnson, Donald Trump and the Emergence of a New Moral Barbarism. It's absolutely fascinating and riveting, and I think puts the current scandal in the proper context it deserves. Peter,
by the way, I've opened up a website listing the lies now.
Oh yeah, what's the website? What's the website again?
Boris-Johnson-Lies.com. And it is like painting the fourth bridge, but I've got about more than 300 lies, falsehoods and misleading statements up there already. It's, you know, it's climbing all the time. I'm trying to get it up to date by the end of this month. It's an enormous amount of work, but I do urge anybody who hasn't looked at that website to have a study of it.
I suppose the R rate of Boris Johnson's lies is exploding at the moment.
Well, they've been going on all along. You're right. The last week or two, and of course, his colleagues are forced to lie on his behalf. Mm. So he drags in Truss, and I'm very careful about it. But they are, you know, they have to say that he's a man of integrity, or that he's a good prime minister, or, you know, it's time to move on. And so they're being dragged into this cesspit. And that is a very serious moment. It's where we go from here is very interesting. But I have to say that if I was Keir Starmer, I would be feeling, he's looking very good at the moment by comparison.
Which I'm about to talk about with Matt Sarb-Cousin, funny enough. We've got, by the way, we've put the website at the bottom, or we did, Boris-Johnson, there it is, Boris-Johnson-Lies.com. I will check it out. It will be a very lengthy read, I'd imagine, but everyone can check it out.
But thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Peter. It's an honour as ever, and really appreciate it. Take care. Brilliant stuff from Peter, as ever. Before I bring in Matt, just housekeeping. If you're watching live, do click on the YouTube link, press like, press subscribe, and then you'll get these videos on your phone or whatever. So you won't have to sit around waiting for them. Also, do support us on Patreon. That's how the whole show's kept on the road. We're going to be doing lots of more documentaries, as we've been doing, thanks to your support. We're not backed by billionaires. We're backed by you. When I come back from, I'm in Barcelona writing a book at the moment. Well, I'm not at the moment, obviously I'm talking to you, but I will be finishing the book and then doing far more on the old video channel. So that's that. Oh, the podcast as well. Download the podcast and leave a rating for it. Thanks. Okay. We're going to bring in Matt Sarb-Cousin, my old compañero. There he is.
Hello, how Matt. You doing?
Very good to see you, mate. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. How's Barca?
That's good. It's nice. I'd say the weather is kind of like London in April, which is fine. It's all right. But it's fine. I mean, when I tweeted about it, it was probably an error. And loads of people like, because I said I'm here for kind of imposed self-isolation to write the book. And people are like, you're trying to prevent, you're a victim, you're living in Barcelona.
You poor thing. Yeah.
It's like, but I just meant I was here to finish my book, which is 3 years overdue.
Is it going okay? Are you nearly done? Do you want a little plug for the book? When's it out?
Thank you for asking, Matt. The Alternative and How We Get Away With It, out later this year. Is that what you're talking about?
Is that, yeah, all good bookshops and some rubbish ones as well? Whereabouts?
A lot of very bad bookshops will be set. No, all bookshops are great, of course. It will come out later this year. Anyway, Matt, right, okay, we'll start first. Let's just start with, we will talk about Labour. I just want to see, in terms of Boris Johnson, do you think this guy is finito? Because as I've said, he does normally defy political gravity. This is quite a big scandal. And as Peter Oban points out, it's very important to say this. There's no scandal like this in modern British democratic history, because you get, you know, like, I don't know, the Westland scandal with Margaret Thatcher, but that wasn't like a personal thing. But this is like the personal character of the Prime Minister and the way he's behaved. That is unique. So what do you think? How do you think he's gone?
It's difficult to say when you're in the eye of the storm. I think, like, having been in the eye of political storms many times when I was working for Jeremy, particularly around the summer of 2016, it's so, so easy to get carried away and caught up. But I think it's, you know, much more important to look at logistically how would his resignation happen? How would it impact the party? What would be the process around that? And what are the things that are compelling him to do it? So obviously the 1922 committee is very important, and the letters from Tory MPs going into the 1922 and triggering a vote of confidence. I don't think that that will happen before the local elections. I think the local elections, if they're bad for Boris Johnson in May, would probably precipitate more letters going in, or enough letters going in. I think around 50 have to be written. And even on that basis, I think he could survive the vote of no confidence, because I think that he has a huge amount of support in the Tory parliamentary party. I think there's a very small contingent of, not small, but not insubstantial, but a comparatively small contingent of Tory MPs who were briefing against him. But despite the scale of the anger and the outrage at what's happened, I can't see how he's going to. I don't see how he's going to resign. I don't think he's going to resign. And therefore, if he's not going to resign, he's going to stay, and he's going to stay until he's forced out. And I can't see him being forced out now. I also think, like, it's not good for the Tory party if they get rid of him now, because we're about to enter into a massive cost of living crisis due in large part to energy costs rising. And I think that they'll want him to own that. I think also we're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of a potential winter NHS crisis. Hopefully Omicron isn't as bad as everyone predicted, but I think that there's a lot of political issues that are around the corner that a potential successor would want to Boris Johnson to sort of own before they come in. So I think the local elections is going to be quite decisive. But that said, he's come back from so much in the past. You know, he's a liar, but he's honest about the fact that he's a liar. He's not a liar that tries to, I know that sounds like paradoxical, but he's a liar, but he tells everyone he's a liar, and everyone sort of accepts that he's a liar, and it's almost priced in a way. And I don't know. I think if the economy improves, if the energy crisis isn't as bad as everyone thinks, if the local elections aren't as bad, lots of ifs, then he could survive.
It is interesting, actually, that after, obviously, the big blast originally of the scandal was December, and actually, Boris Johnson's polling did actually recover quite substantially until the recent, it went up by, like, I think it was like 20 points. It was very low, but it climbed quite steeply. And the polling, which was obviously very bad for the Tories, had started to narrow as well, like a 4-point lead, 3-point lead for Labour, rather than what it was before, about 9 points. Obviously, that's turned around. Before I talk about Labour and kind of their positioning and all of this and where next, what do you think about Rishi Sunak? Do you think Rishi Sunak is someone, if he took over? Because I remember I spoke to a key Starmer aide back in 2020. I don't speak to many key Starmer aides anymore, I should be honest about that. But I did at the time, lots of lines of communication with him. And they argued that actually, you see, Sunak would be a different proposition because they thought he wouldn't go down very well in the so-called Red Wall. But they thought actually a lot of metropolitan liberals might be swung by him in kind of places like Putney in London, which is the only seat Labour won in 2019, infamously. Because and I think the reason is odd you'd think that because, you know, Rishi Sunak campaigned for Brexit. But for a lot of those liberals, politics is more of a vibe than actual substance. It's like when they went on about how Jeremy Corbyn was a Brexiteer and then they all loved Rory Stewart, even though Rory Stewart was a Brexiteer. Do you see what I mean? So I don't know. What do you think about Rishi Sunak? Do you think actually, because his polling is not great objectively, but it's better than both Starmer and Johnson. But then again, he's Chancellor. He's not a known kind of quantity to a lot of people. So what do you think, Rishi Sunak?
Yeah, I think two things. It's a different proposition. And I think it's bad for Labour because Labour needs the Lib Dems to do well in Lib Dem Tory marginals, and they didn't do well in 2019. That was one of the problems, is they weren't splitting the Tory vote enough, or they weren't making winning Tory seats in those southern areas. So they are doing that now with Johnson. So that's one thing. Secondly, I think Sunak would address that. Secondly, I think that a lot of the decline in Tory support at the moment and the resulting Labour poll lead is down to Tory voters switching to don't know because of a lot of anger with Johnson, which if Johnson goes, the anger you would assume would also go. I mean, I don't think it's a problem with the Tory brand yet. And I think, like, perhaps, you know, slight contrast to what Peter was saying, I think that if they change the leader, you end up with this massive, when the Tories change the leader, and they do it, they've done it quite frequently in the last 11 years, you have this massive honeymoon period where the entire media and in some respects the country just sort of projects what they want onto this particular leader. We had it with Theresa May. Look at the honeymoon that Theresa May had when she had like a 20-point lead in 2016 and then going into 2017, into the election. And then as soon as she ran into reality, with the reality of a general election, that poll lead got eaten up. So I think that actually, there's every reason to suspect that those don't knows would switch back, which I think is not great for Labour. So I think that the problems with the Labour Party, until the problems with the Conservative Party are more structural and the brand is tainted to the extent that people, the don't knows switch to Labour because they're just fed up of all Tories, then I don't think that Labour are going to make, you know, inroads that are necessary. I think that what they do very effectively, the Tories, is that they come up with this sort of method of maintaining power over a long period of time, which is to change the leader every few years. And it's pretty similar to what Chelsea Football Club do. They change the manager every few years, and it's like having a new government. And that's what, if it's Sunak, that's what it will be. It will be a new government, the new agenda, and then you'll have this massive honeymoon period. I mean, already, like, you know, the BBC are quite keen to kind of build him up. They have done in the past. They've like mocked him up as Superman. So this is what will happen. And it's a very, very different prospect. And I think that very, very quickly, it starts to tap into those southern constituents.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm going to start by defending Keir Starmer. Now, in the interest of fairness, because people are, oh, you're so horrible to Keir Starmer, leave him alone. What's he ever done to you? Apart from just run a completely dishonest leadership campaign and abandon all the promises that he made to become leader of the Labour Party. Anyway, but I'm going to start by defending him because, so I've got a clip here. This is him on, I was going to say Mar, but it's not Mar anymore because he's gone on Sophie Rayworth's programme. Anyway, whatever it's called. Here he is.
No. Have you broken COVID rules?
No, I haven't.
So what is that photograph that as a lot of people will have seen, has been on the front pages, it's taken last year, end of April, beginning of May. Just explain what that was.
Happily, I was in a constituency office just days before the election. We were very busy. We were working in the office and we stopped for something to eat. And then we carried on working. That is the long, the short of it. No party, no breach of the rules, and absolutely no comparison with the Prime Minister. And
but there were rules in place. This was step two guidelines at the time. No person may participate in a gathering in the step two area, which consists of two or more people and takes place indoors unless it's reasonably necessary for work purposes.
We were in the office, the constituency office. It was days before the election. We were very busy. We were working. At some point, some food turned up. We stopped, we had our food, and then we carried on working. That is not a breach of the rules. It's not a party, and it is no comparison to the Prime Minister.
Drinking a beer, is that reasonably necessary for work purposes?
We'd stopped to eat a takeaway whilst we were working in the office, and then we carried on.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is desperate, to be honest. I think I've seen, obviously, the mayor went on this. I actually do think this is a pretty desperate attack because, obviously, there was rampant partying by the people who designed the rules and they're trying to muddy the water. I think this is pretty desperate. I think it was kind of a creep shot as well, kind of weird, creepy shots of... So I'm going to defend him. That's my defence of Keir Starmer done. So, before... Now what we're going to talk about, what you just mentioned... was the polling, which is important, about where the polling is going. So a lot of people now are, because me and you have not, I think it's been fair to say, particularly enamoured with Keir Starmer's leadership. For the reasons I've said, he stood on a platform of radical domestic polities, party unity, both those key pledges that he abandoned. He basically wanted to be competent Corbyn as he would have portrayed it. That's how he portrayed it. And then abandoned all of that. Kind of quite drastically. But there are people now saying to us, well, you've both been proven wrong because you said look, the polling was terrible for Labour under Keir Starmer. He's not electable. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, the polling collapse hasn't been caused by Keir Starmer. It's been caused by the Tories essentially dousing themselves with petrol and setting themselves on fire. So the point you made, and this is a really important point, I'm going to show a graph here for people who are listening on the podcast. What it shows is what has happened to the 2019 Tory vote. Now, what it shows is the Tories have kept 47% of their vote, which is not great. They've lost 33% to apathy. So 33% of their 2019 vote have gone to don't know. 6% have gone to Reform UK, which is the Brexit party reinvented. They should have kept the Brexit party. I mean, it's just a rubbish name, but anyway, there you have it. Labour have only got 5% of that vote, and the Lib Dems have got 4%. So actually, I mean, they've lost more of the Tory vote has actually gone to Reform, which is not even is barely registering in the opinion polls, and about as much has gone to the Lib Dems, which is not necessarily bad for Labour, as you pointed out, because actually, in certain marginals, that is actually they're Tory Lib Dem marginals. But what that graph shows isn't people going, I'm really angry with the Conservatives, and now I'm going to take my vote over to the Labour Party. It's people going, I'm not voting at the moment. I'm too angry to vote for the Conservatives, but I'm not taking my vote elsewhere. That's not necessarily good at all from Labour's perspective, because in a general election campaign, a lot of those will just go back to the Conservatives because they'll think, well, it's a choice between Labour and I don't like Keir Starmer. And just quickly on his approval ratings, that was an old one. Let me find it. Sorry. His latest approval ratings are down to minus 19, basically. They're down to minus 19, which is a lot better than Boris Johnson, which just says how bad Boris Johnson's are. Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? They're not doing what they said they'd do, which is winning over Tory voters. That was the whole point. They're not winning them over.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, like, really, the Conservatives, I think, will keep Johnson for as long as they can, for as long as he doesn't damage the Tory brand. So, I think that it's probably the local elections will be the flashpoint. I may be wrong. I mean, they might keep him until the last 6 months to the next general election. If that's the case, then you've got an unpopular Labour leader, which I'm sorry, it's just that's just what the polling says. He's an unpopular Labour leader. He's not winning over disaffected Tories, not yet anyway. And the new Tory leader who's probably more capable of winning back those don't knows than Keir Starmer is of winning them. So you've not got a Labour leadership that's doing what Corbyn tried to do and did with some success in 2017, which is like expand the electorate and, have propositional offer, which actually did end up winning over a lot of Tory voters as well. So you haven't got that. So therefore, you've got this kind of neo-Blairite strategy, which is, don't say an awful lot, look the part, look like you are acceptable to capital and to big business and the media, the right-wing media, acceptable enough anyway, apart from the Daily Mail, obviously, which did ran that attack story. And then pick up people because the government will implode. Now, that only works if Johnson continues to implode and if he stays till the next general election. So I think it's really high risk. I mean, it is not a vindication of Keir Starmer that the government has self-immolated. That is just, you know, that's part, that's at this stage of the electoral cycle, you know, yeah, they might be ahead in the polls, but the only poll that matters, it's a cliche, the only poll that matters is the general election. And what are they doing to lay the groundwork for winning a general election, knowing that either Johnson will recover and, you know, we know what you can do in an election campaign, or B, there's a new leader, which is basically like a new government, and you have a clean slate and a honeymoon period. And if that is in the lead up to the next election, like Johnson was, where like he didn't have time to screw anything up, all he did was put the Brexit deal to Parliament, it got rejected, and they called an election. I mean, look, you had the whole vote leave contingent involved in number 10 at that time, and that was the plan. You know, they were just, but that, but the point is, Johnson was still in his honeymoon period then. So I can't see how this is a sustainable strategy for winning an election. It might be like good fun for now, you know, Labour ahead in the polls and all this sort of stuff. But like that, I think that will get eaten up. Hope I'm wrong, but I think it will just get eaten up.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. A lot of the same people who say, well, actually the Tories self-immolating, which they have done, complete disgrace, and people are understandably furious because obviously they couldn't hold the hands of their dying relatives. They were separated from their loved ones. 8 million people live alone, often horrible stretches of loneliness, whilst the government were getting absolutely battered in number 10, getting smashed and doing who knows what. I don't even want to think about it. But I think what's interesting is the same people who are pretending that Labour have done this, as though Starmer, people needed Starmer to get angry about the Partygate. Like, it doesn't need any explanation. It just stands on its own terms as a terrible, terrible behaviour. They're the same people who go, well, the only reason Labour got 40% in 2017 is because the Tories ran a terrible campaign. But obviously at the time, that wasn't, the Tories ran a bad campaign because Labour ran a good campaign. Like, the dementia tax at the time was framed by the Mail as a great, brilliant policy. It was only when it was portrayed as the dementia tax that had an impact. There were two terrorist attacks, which, to be honest, in a campaign in which the opposition was being portrayed as terrorist supporters, obviously helped the government. And also the polling showed the policies were absolutely pivotal, and even MPs hostile at the time. I'm not doing this to relitigate 2017. I'm just saying it's just interesting that those same people now go, well, actually, this, you know, and obviously this is entirely the Tories. Just on other things. I'm just looking, so I forgot, Super Chat. Well, I'll read out people's Super Chat. I'll thank everyone at the end, so keep them coming in. Yeah, Craig Berkey says, Blair survived the dodgy dossier scandal that took us to warn the false pretenses. Boris will survive this. They said they'll cut taxes in the next election. The reason I'm sceptical about that, I know we're jumping around, but people are putting these questions in, which I'm happy to answer, obviously. A war should matter more, like the mass murder of hundreds of thousands of people. It's not how politics works. People are just... Whether you like it or not, this has cut through because it just has for in the way politics works. I mean, I'm interested because Rishi Sunak, I think if he took over, he'd scrap the national insurance hike, wouldn't he? He'd do stuff like that to reboot. So, I mean, that's we saw what happened with Thatcher. She won an even bigger majority than Johnson in 1987. She was ejected when she was seen as a liability, and replaced with John Major, who seems quite dull, but he won against Kinnock. And that's the problem, isn't it? That's why Labour need a positive vision that resonates with people rather than think it'll just fall into their lap.
Yeah, it's why they need a transformative offer. Look, in 1997, they had a transformative offer. They did. They had windfall tax on energy companies. They had, you know, obviously...
Minimum wage,
yeah. They had so many different transformative policies that were, you know, to a degree, radical for the time. And they need that offer again. Now, okay, you could argue, okay, it's too early to be pulling forward policies and all this sort of stuff. But I feel like post-financial crisis Blairism is much more, it's more moderate. And it's more like, I think, it's less risk averse than it was in the 90s. I don't know, I just think it's a different proposition. And actually what you need is the opposite, because in the 90s, you know, the New Labour inherited a growing economy and, you know, house prices were affordable for most people. And they had, you know, there's lots of things that about the 90s, which meant that you didn't necessarily need the kind of economic transformation that you could argue you need now. So Blairism has become less radical at the time when it actually needs to be more radical. So I feel like there's less of a reason to vote Labour than there is to not vote Tory at the moment. And until that changes, then that's what will happen. You'll just get the Tory vote going to don't know and then going back to the Tories. Like, I do think they need to be propositional. If they're going to, like, so these guys are up for grabs now, these voters. This is the opportunity. This really is the opportunity to win people over, and as a party. And, you know, I think Keir Starmer, if he became synonymous and associated with some really, really popular policies, and people understood who he was as a politician, not just as a man or his aesthetic and like how he comes across and his personality even, but what his politics are, who he is as a politician, then people might feel like they can warm to him. But at the moment, it's like no one really knows what he stands for. And you know, you mentioned before, like, we haven't been happy with Starmer. Okay, but he did stand on a platform of 2017 being our foundational document, the manifesto in 2017, of party unity, and has, you know, as it happens, he's sort of called the internal factional war on the left in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, obviously because he wants to attack the Conservatives, and it's a great opportunity to. And as a result of that, the polls have improved. So, you know, that tells you something as well. I think he's been badly advised by people around him that are clearly wanting to reenact, their glory years in the 90s, but without any of the transformative policies or the vision that they had in the 90s. So I think it's the worst of all worlds at the moment. But look, he's ahead in the polls. Let's see if he wins over the don't knows. I don't see how he can if he's not giving people a reason to vote Labour. I think that's the problem.
I mean, that point you made as well about, you know, people, you know, oh, you have it in for Starmer. I mean, I wrote a column which actually still some people on the left have a go at me over. I didn't vote for him. I voted for Rebecca Long Bailey. But when he won, I wrote a column saying, you know, fair play. Everyone should unite around him. He stood on, you know, radical domestic policies, party unity. Wish him well. Hope he, you know. It's only when he abandoned those promises that people like myself went sour on it. But that's the issue.
Owen, in the leadership campaign, obviously I worked on Rebecca's campaign, and it was impossible to find points of policy difference with him. Like, it was like something that we were trying to do, and we were trying to draw him out. And then you had the 10 pledges, and that just became impossible. So we were trying to show that Rebecca was, you know, going to preserve many of the gains, the policy gains and the direction of travel that took place under Jeremy Corbyn, and, you know, some of the most popular policies of his agenda would be preserved, and you know, that they may be at risk under Keir Starmer, right? And it was incredibly difficult to show that. I mean, you can't tell people that because they won't believe you. So you have to show them, and in order to show them, you have to draw the other candidate out. And the only thing we drew out of him were the 10 pledges, and he's practically reneged on all of them. So I don't want to get into all of this now. I shouldn't really, but it just as a point, you know, that was what was promised. And, you know, I think a return, more of a return to that, would actually be in the Labour Party's interest. I've always said this, like, the issue is not the agenda, but you could argue that the agenda, because it is considered left wing, it would alienate the right wing media. And they want the legitimacy of the right-wing media because their strategy is to wait for the government to implode and for them to appear to be the safe pair of hands for the capital and for all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's what I think that they're more keen on. But again, like, if you asked anyone in the street what policy do you associate with Keir Starmer, I don't think they'd be able to tell you other than maybe remain in the European Union.
Well, the British Recovery Bond. Remember that, everyone? No one remembers it. But yeah, I mean, just finally, you're right. I mean, I think what's absolutely key for Labour is to look at the by-elections were obviously lost Batley. Didn't lose Batley and Spen. Barely kept on to Batley and Spen, but obviously lost in Hartlepool. And what the problem there was is they weren't winning over voters who left Labour in 2019, but they were also alienating existing parts of Labour's coalition. In Batley and Spen, that was particularly Muslims, Labour Muslim voters who'd voted Labour all their lives. I spoke to them. I mean, you know, they were angry with Labour, and a lot of younger people. And you know, you've got to, as you say, expand the electorate. You've got to get people to come out and feel they're voting for something. Otherwise, yeah. Matt, that was brilliant. That was fantastic stuff. Good to see you again.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, good to see you, mate. Yeah, catch up soon.
Yeah, and we'll have drinks in Blighty when I'm back.
Perfect. Good luck with the writing of the book.
Thanks, mate.
And
it's a slog.
I'm looking forward to it. Nice one.
Everyone follow Matt on Twitter as well. It's Matt Zarb. Was it Matt ZC? I can't remember. Is it Matt Zarb?
It's Matt Zarb.
It is Matt Zarb. Matt Zarb, two T's. Thanks. All right. Bless you, buddy. Cheers. Take care of yourself. All thanks. Bye-bye. Great stuff. Cracking stuff from Matt as ever. Just finally, I missed... this is important, actually. I obviously wasn't in London, but I missed... the protests against the police bill, which took place in across the country, actually. Now, this is really, really, really important. I wrote a column about this earlier this year. Obviously, it was only January, so earlier this month, I'll say. What the policing bill does, for those who don't know, is give the ability to essentially criminalise all protests in this country. For being too noisy, for causing specific annoyance. They allow stop and search of protesters without any suspicion, or stop and search within the area of a protest, so anyone. They grant sweeping powers to the state to decide which protests are allowed. Now, what they did, we can see already, they're trying to use the kind of backlash against Insulate Britain. Insulate Britain are obviously a group which conduct peaceful civil disobedience. You might not like them or like what they do, but that is a long tradition in this country. Lots of our rights and freedoms were won like that. I think the climate emergency is a slightly bigger problem, given it's an existential threat to human civilization, than obviously people being delayed on motorways. But nonetheless, people are angry about Insulate Britain, and that they're trying to tap into that. Now, this is dangerous because we are heading in the kind of direction of somewhere like Hungary, where you get, I mean, in Hungary is ruled by a party called Fidesz, which is a centre-right party, was a centre-right party, used to be a member of the Liberal International, and they've become a far-right, essentially, dictatorship. They've trashed democracy, they've hollowed out civil society, they've used culture wars and racism in order to achieve their ends. Sound familiar? And, you know, they've clamped down on basic rights and freedoms. And we can just see that, we're not like Hungary yet. That's a low bar there, isn't it? But we are becoming an ever more authoritarian and undemocratic country under the Conservatives. It's another example. Banning audit. They can ban anyone convicted of more than one protest-related offence and going to protests for years. If they see, you know, people attaching themselves to others or the ground or an object, which is the most kind of cliched civil disobedience thing ever, they now face imprisonment. I mean, it's you know, and you get these Tory MPs who talk about restrictions for COVID-related purposes, public health measures, as being, you know, as Marcus Fish said, a Tory MP, we're not a paper society. This is not Nazi Germany, ridiculous hyperbole. It's a thin end of an authoritarian wedge. Tim Loughton, we're not a society in which we ask for papers and deprive people of their liberty. These chumps went and voted for the bill which criminalises protest in this country. Anyway, do Google, look up Kill the Bill, which is the movement which is fighting against the legislation, which is going to go through the House of Lords. It's really important people stand up and fight this, because our rights and freedoms were won by the struggle and sacrifice of our ancestors, on whose shoulders we stand. And it's not for us to just meekly sit around whilst those rights and freedoms, which are hard won, are just taken off us. So we should fight back. So look up Kill the Bill and do support them. I'm just going to finish. Tad Campbell says, over the last few weeks, 100 years ago, the end of British rule in Ireland has been happening, culminating with a handover of Dublin Castle to the Irish Provisional Government led by Michael Collins. There you go. I'm going to thank everyone who did Super Chats, including Tad, David Bowater, Kieran Buckley, Craig Berkey, Peter O'Donovan, John McKenzie. Thank you so much, everybody. And thanks for our brilliant guests. That was great. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I do think it's important we talk about the horrific scandal embroiling the Tories and Labour's prospects. That might annoy some people, but, you know, we just need to be honest about politics as we see it. And that's what we've done. But we will monitor the situation on the show in the weeks ahead. We've got loads of shows and interviews to come. So, and from February, when I finish my book, we'll be doing far more on the channel. Do support us on patreon.com, OwenJones84. Press subscribe on YouTube. Press like. Good for the algorithm. We'll watch it and listen to our podcast as well. Right, back to my book. Lots of love, everyone. See you soon. Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you found that informative, educational, interesting, and isolated. Do support us on Patreon to keep the show on the road, /OwenJones84. Leave us some stars, that'd be nice. Spread the word. And I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.